Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here! And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. Well, it's over. It's Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. here at the fabulous Jove Enterprise Studios, and I'm still taking in the events from last night, which, of course, was the election. And, of course, well, you can call it that. And, of course, as I expected, Mr. Bush won. I didn't expect Mr. Kerry to win. I don't blame Mr. Kerry. I've heard a lot of talk from a lot of the blogs, people talking about Kerry didn't do this, Kerry didn't. Look, you people just don't understand. He was bound to lose this election. I mean, first of all, I don't think it was a fair election to begin with. I think if it had been a fair election, it would be a different story. But you know that those people were going to do everything they possibly could to pull this thing out, and once more, they pulled it out by the skin of their teeth. And this year it was Ohio rather than Florida being the last-minute thing. And the question is, what next? What happens? I'm not about to grab a gun and go out into the street and start shooting. It's kind of pointless anyway. I'm no good at it. But, you know, it's hard for me not to be bitter about it, even though I expected it all along. It's just like a thing where, you know, you're watching your favorite team, and they're playing, and they're down early, and you think, okay, this will have time to catch up. And then, you know, it's still late, and the lead has gotten bigger, and you think it only takes a miracle. And then after a while, it's like a train wreck, and you can't help but watch it as the other team. I felt kind of that way when the Falcons lost a couple of weeks ago to Kansas City. Kansas City got off to a quick start, and, you know, you think that, you know, they're going to finally hold them and maybe make a comeback. But nope, never happened, and we got slaughtered. We didn't exactly get slaughtered this time around. We actually did worse in the popular vote than we did last time around. Bush won by about 3 million. There's a lot of reports that the exit polls in Ohio and Florida did not match the actual election results, which would not surprise me. Those are two key states right there. And either one having changed, everything would have gone to Kerry. But you know the thing about it is, and the thing that I tried to tell my people on the left, my friends on the left, is look, Kerry winning didn't mean a damn thing anyway. The Republicans were still going to control the Congress. The Republicans were still going to control the Senate. And Kerry would have been lucky to have gone through 4 years without being impeached or shot. You know, it's mind-boggling to me that people were sitting there thinking that, you know, Kerry gets in and flowers are going to fucking bloom. It just wasn't going to happen, people. And plus, even if you would assume that Kerry would have won this thing, Bush sort of still had Bush and his people would have still been in power until January. One of the things we can expect is that they'll be even more secretive and they'll be even more in control because the moderate Republicans aren't going to do anything. They're more loyal to the party than they are to the country, and they're just, you know, they're not going to vote their conscience. They're going to vote with Mr. Bush and his people, who, of course, will be threatening them anyway with all sorts of stuff. The question for me is, how will the international community react to it? Well, you know, some people would just say, well, why should we care what they think? Well, you know, they happen to live in this world, too. And they're not stupid. It may strengthen the European Union, realizing that, you know, what could happen to America, what's happened to America can make the world a more dangerous place for them, especially with the way we've treated our allies over there. I really don't know what the immediate future holds. I know from a personal standpoint, it's going to get more difficult for me because it'll make it more difficult for my wife to get her disability because these guys don't like that. Something for nothing only comes if you're already a rich executive. They get plenty of something for nothing. My wife should hopefully get her surgery. Maybe after that she'll be healthy enough so that we won't have to worry too much about that sort of thing. The company where I work for, Siemens, they were planning on moving parts of the shop to Mexico. Will that accelerate because Bush is president again? I don't know. I really don't know because I'm not sure what their methodology is at that plant. So I could wind up losing my job at the end of January. I could wind up losing it sooner than that. We'll see what happens. It's a very disappointing thing. And if Mr. Kerry had gotten in, would they have continued on what they were doing? I really don't know. To those of you out there who are crying in your beer, you know what? Just lick your wounds and come back fighting, man. You know, I've said time and time again that you people don't understand the nature of the game. We don't have a real organization. Everything we have is in its embryonic stages. The New Deal didn't spring up overnight. The New Deal started in the era right after the Civil War with the first progressive movement. They got some stuff passed under Teddy Roosevelt, but these guys all tried this stuff out in New York City anyway. That's where it all began because they were the first to realize the dangers of unleashed capitalism and what happens to people in situations like that. And they took steps to change it because they felt bad that some people were making so much money and others were just living horrible, filthy lives. Because they didn't have enough. And we have to realize that our movement is just beginning. But we're just in the embryonic stages. Terry McAuliffe needs to go as DNC chair. People have been suggesting Governor Dean for that. That wouldn't be a bad idea. I'm not sure if Dean is ready for the presidency. They're talking about maybe Hillary Clinton in 08. I don't think that makes a difference either because we're going to be looking at Jeb Bush anyway. Bob Shrum, who was Kerry's advisor, hasn't won a major election yet. Let's hope his career is over because, you know, everybody comes to him for advice. He's supposed to be so great. And every time people do that, people lose. I don't understand what that's all about. You want to go with somebody, you go with somebody who's going to win. It's very disappointing. Part of it is the media not doing its job. Part of it is the fact that people just buy into the Bush rhetoric. You know, oh, he's going to protect us by attacking them over here instead of them attacking us over here. You know, they're planning on a major assault at Fallujah. And they were planning on that before the election. And, in fact, they were holding it off until after the election. If they flatten Fallujah, which is what I'm hearing that they're planning on doing, and I mean just rack it out, it's a city of 300,000 people. Then the entire Iraqi population might just turn against us. I mean, the insurgency is larger than we're admitting it is, but it's bad enough as it is now. Fallujah has a lot of holy sites in it, very holy sites. For Catholics, it would be the equivalent of somebody bombing the Vatican because there were people hiding out there. You know, or bombing the areas in the Middle East where Jesus lives specifically. You know, for Christians and Muslims and Jews, all the big religions there have their base in that one small area. And now these guys, you know, New York Times already says mandate, which is ridiculous. A mandate means an overwhelming victory. And, of course, there was no such thing. Even with all the shenanigans, they really only barely squeaked by. But, you know, in politics, and I've said this before, there's no such fucking thing as second place. There is no such thing as second place. You either win or you stay home. You either win and have power or you lose and have none. And that's the bottom line. And we don't understand that. You know, if Kerry had won, and if the Democrats had a stronger showing as we had in, say, 32, you know, proportionally speaking, then we could start talking about what, you know, where we can go in the future. A long time ago, I wrote an article called The Meaning of Victory. And the only thing victory really means is that we have so much work ahead of us, we can't even get started on the work yet. We have to spend all of our time fighting delaying actions and making sure they get as little as what they want as possible, but that's seeming less and less likely. And you know, the moderates in the Republican Party, as I said before, they're not going to speak up. They're going to go with Mr. Bush all the way and basically do what they're told to do. And there's people saying, well, we really need the hardcore left to do it. Well, I'm not really sure if the hardcore left support is out there, there's enough of them to make a real difference. And they're not very intelligent politically either. The Green Party, I've said time and time again, needs to get involved in the grassroots level. Stop worrying about winning the presidency and worry about taking over the school boards and the city councils. You know, that's what we got to do. We got to start small. To those of you out there with money, if you want blogs like mine and Atrios and Daily Coast to succeed, you're going to have to start ponying up some money. You know how many shows I would like to do a week? I would like to do a show every day if I could. But who am I? I'm just by myself. I'm doing everything by myself here. I get the occasional donation, which is nice, and I always appreciate it, but I can't make a living off of this. I have to go out and work 40 hours a week. Now, if somebody were to get me on Air America, would hire me at, say, Air America, or maybe Sirius Radio, where I can get on and have my voice heard by a lot more people, then, you know, I'm all for it. Let me devote more time to this, which is what I'd prefer to do, instead of having to get up and, you know, put screws in a box for 8 hours a day, which is basically what I do. And all that time is just wasted. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that's how I earn my living, it's wasted in the sense that I'm not doing what I really would like to do, and really would hopefully I can make a lot more money doing that. If anybody knows anybody who knows anybody who knows George Soros, have him give me a call. I can use a few bucks. The question is, where are they going to go next? They want to go after Iran. But they're not going to be able to if Iraq stands up. You know, the Iraqis can throw us out. There's a lot more of them there than there are of us. And if the whole country turns against us, they can kick us out. I mean, all the big nuclear weapons, that doesn't mean a damn thing. You're talking house-to-house fighting here. Unless you're planning on pulling the soldiers out and nuking them into oblivion, as if that would do any good. Or nuking the entire Middle East into oblivion. Are they planning on killing everybody? No. But you know what the thing about it is, that they can keep creating terrorist after terrorist after terrorist, because obviously fear works. And it's a good motivator to get people to the polls. Certainly down here in the South and in the Midwest, they're very concerned about that. In the flyover states, that's their big deal. Of course, they very rarely have to deal with that directly. In fact, the only time they dealt with a terrorist threat in that sense was in Oklahoma City. And that was not done by an Arab terrorist. Although I remember that people were trying to blame the Arabs on that too, or the Muslims on that too, originally, until the news came out. But I get particularly pissed off, though, at my friends on the left when they don't fucking listen to me. I've been screaming in their ear for as long as I could that they still have a more powerful political machine than we do. And they're not afraid of wielding it, and they're not afraid of going above, beyond the pale. They go outside the box. That's the term I'm looking for. They're not afraid to go outside the box and do things. The elections don't mean anything to them because they know they can rig it. They're not interested in the democratic process. They just want the power and they want the money. And they're very, very good at getting it. The only problem is, and I've said this before, is that once they get it, they don't know what to do with it except for to get more money and more power. And that's the plain truth. We had a situation at work on Monday where a lady who was working, in fact, right near me on the line there, she was on the opposite side, but she was like right next to me. And all of a sudden she was kind of like sitting down and, you know, she had stopped work. And I said, "Are you out of parts?" And then I noticed that she was really kind of, "Are you okay?" And she said she was feeling a little dizzy. And she started to slump over in her chair. And I called the supervisor, and the lady next door went over to her, and apparently what happened was that she had had a blood sugar attack or a low blood sugar attack. And I haven't seen it personally myself. When I explained what happened to my wife, she recognized it immediately. Her second husband was diabetic, and she had a very low blood sugar, and that causes you to pass out, and that's exactly what happened. And the reason why she had that happen to her is because she hadn't been taking her medicine in 8 weeks. And the reason why she hadn't been taking medicine for 8 weeks is because she couldn't afford it. And are things going to get any better for people like that under Mr. Bush? Certainly not. Were they going to get that much better for them under Mr. Kerry? Not really, because, again, the Republicans were going to block everything he was going to do anyway. We need to win this by such overwhelming margins that I can't possibly see a victory for the next 30 or 40 years. It's a conservative world out there in the flyover states. And the bulk of the people of the country, well, the bare minimum of people in the country live there. Bare minimum of the majority live there. You know, we took all the big states. We took all the New England states. We took all the West Coast. Ohio was probably, you know, Ohio and Florida were our best bets, but they went Bush's way. And of course, the Diebold people, that's where they operate. I mean, that's their CEO lives there, and he's in charge of those machines, and he built them programming. So I'm sure that there was enough vote shaving going on. Nothing so obvious, but enough to keep it close enough so that, you know, you don't have to rig it that much. Even presidents who are operating on a really big mandate, the difference in actual numbers is not that great. And since you can rig the machines to do, say, pretty much anything you want, and either be during or after the fact, then it really doesn't matter. Well, we'll see how bad it gets or if it really does get better. Hey, you know, there's part of me that hopes maybe everything will change and things will go. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I know I still have to go to work today, like I'll have to go to work tomorrow, like I'll have to go to work on other days. And I don't really see any more hope for me in the future along those lines, just being able to go to work. And I'll still be in poverty. And a lot of you out there will still be too. It's just going to be a long, hard struggle, people. Don't assume that you're going to win this in your lifetimes. You have to think for your children and your grandchildren at this point. It takes at least 30 years to build up a movement, people. It takes at least 30 years. And we have to ready ourselves for that. Anyway, enough being depressed. I'll be depressed later. Or I'll stop being depressed later. Right now, let's take a little quickie. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Let's get off the launching pad.
Yeah.
Her Majesty's government is very anxious to popularize the notion of civil defense. Now, the government's defense, what for want of a better word I'll call policy, is based on the concept of the deterrent. No. Take a situation in which what, for purposes of argument, we'll call an unnamed power should take a nuclear missile and drop it on the United Kingdom. That's you and me. We, in the United Kingdom, would then take another nuclear missile and drop it on Russia, on the unnamed power. This, you see, would deter them from bringing... Rather, it would effectually discourage them. Well, it would jolly well serve them right. Now, I've got an apology to make to you tonight, actually, because I was going to bring along a hydrogen bomb to show you. We do have one or two, you know, that we send round to women's institutes and so on. But, unfortunately, the one I had my eye on was being used this evening.
A lot of people in this country tend to think the whole problem of the hydrogen bomb being rather above their head. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. The issue is a simple one. Kill or be killed.
Or both.
Now we shall receive... We shall receive 4 minutes warning of any impending nuclear attack. Well, some people have said, oh my goodness me, 4 minutes, that's not a very long time. Well, I'd remind those doubters that some people in this great country of ours can run a mile in 4 minutes. Basically, the defense of Great Britain rests in the hands of our sea slugs. If our sea slugs fail to get through, then we shall fall back on our blue waters. If our blue waters let us down, we've still got good old germ warfare up our sleeve. I must admit here, there is a very strong possibility that our sea slugs won't get through. The British sea slug is a ludicrously cumbersome vehicle, depending as it does on a group of highly trained runners carrying it into enemy territory. Boffins are working on this. They're thinking of fitting it up with some rather ingenious device, some sort of wing, something along those lines, turning into some kind of flying machine or other, in which case it will be renamed Greased Lightning. I must sit down. I feel one of my attacks coming up.
Now, this does mean that if we are lucky enough in any future hostilities to be the aggressor, we are in a position... We are in a position to strike a blow of 20, 30, or even 40 mega deaths. Or to put that in more human terms, that is to say, 40 million dead bodies strewn all about the place. Now, following such a blow, our sea slugs would then come into their own and bring our score up into the 70 or even 80 mega death bracket, which is practically the maximum score permitted by the Geneva Convention.
I can see one or two of you are thinking, now look here, what if one of our American friends makes a boo-boo and presses the wrong button and sends up one of their missiles by mistake? It could not happen. You see, because before they press that button, they've got to get on the phone to number 10 Downing Street and say, now look, Mr. Macmillan, sir, can I press this button? And Mr. Macmillan will say, yes, or no, as the mood takes me.
Very good.
Now there's a flaw in this argument.
Yes, there is.
What if Mr. McMillan's out? Perfectly simple. Common sense, really. We'd ask Lady Dorothy. Now, at this point, I'll throw the whole thing at you, if you're worried or if you've got any questions about civil defence. Let's hear about them.
The question over there, I think. The question up there, I think. Oh, dear, we'll have to take this one.
Yes?
Following the nuclear holocaust, could you tell me when normal public services would be resumed?
Your patron?
Very fair question. We have got it in hand, of course. Following Armageddon, we do hope to have normal public services working fairly smoothly pretty soon after the event. Now, I feel in all fairness, I ought to point out that it must needs be something in the nature of a skeleton service.
Now, what can we do from a practical point of view in the event of a nuclear attack? Well, the first golden rule to remember about hydrogen warfare is to be out of the area where the attack is about to occur. Get right out of that area, because that's the danger area where the bombs are dropping. Get right out of it. If you're out of it, you're well out of it. If you're in it, you're really in it. If you are caught in it when the bomb drops, for goodness sake, don't move. Stand absolutely stock still. Not under a tree, of course, that could be extremely dangerous. All about radiation. I hear a strangled cry. Well, there is a lot you can do about radiation, you know. As soon as the dust has settled, the best thing you can do is hold your breath and jump into a brown paper bag. Nothing like good old brown paper for protecting you. Draw it on, rather like a cloud, you see. You're very maneuverable, you see. You can do anything you like inside this brown paper bag. So that's the rule. The bomb drops. The dust settles. Hold your breath. Jump into your brown paper bag. And pop along to your local civil defence leader.
And he'll tell you exactly what you can do.
Back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not so humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's V for Vecchio, V for victory. And I'm still trying to get over the results. That was, by the way, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore from Beyond the Fringe, the great English comedy troupe. We know Dudley Moore from Ten and Arthur. Peter Cook is maybe a little less known in the States, but the two were a wonderful comedy team, and some of their writers went on to form Monty Python. I'm not sure which of the writers worked for them. There were several different British comedy groups in the 60s, and the Pythons worked for them. Spike Mulligan, The Goon Show, and Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. And again, I'm still trying to get over all this, and it's hard. Sorry about that. It's hard not to be bitter about the whole thing, and you wonder, you know, what went wrong in this country where people saw, you know, apparently the spin is that people saw gay marriage was the important thing, and I'm like, are you shitting me? With all the things going on in the world, is that what they think is important? Is that what they're worried about? Oh, them gays are going to get married. I don't, you know, I still have trouble believing the results from Ohio and Florida anyway, mainly because the exit polls were showing something almost completely opposite. And you knew that there was going to be vote rigging going on, and I think they did just enough to make it look. But you know what? It doesn't matter anyway. Like I said, if Kerry had won this election, and this is what I want to remind everybody who's feeling down, and I'm feeling down because I'm pissed that he didn't win, but if you look at it from a certain point of view, you can say, look, if he did win, what would it have done anyway? They would have impeached him. They would have hounded his ass for the next 4 years, you know. Bichon talks about, oh, the party of gloom and doom, and, you know, where's all the optimism? But I fail to see what's optimistic about 1,100 dead U.S. soldiers and tens of thousands of Iraqis with more to come just killed. About unemployment up through the roof, about less choices for working people. You know, you basically, it's a situation for me and for others like me where you almost have to put your life on hold because you know there's really not very much upward mobility, especially for a blue state guy living in a red state. I've heard some people talk about, you know, leaving the country and moving on, and you know, that may be an option for some of you. My friend Dave already moved, not for political reasons, of course, because his wife is Canadian and she was living down here for a while and she got tired of it, as I don't blame her. And they moved up to Toronto, which, from what I understand, is a very, very nice city. And Dave is having a good time up there and he's enjoying life in a real town. But he's a little bit perturbed about what's gone on here anyway. The Canadians think we're nuts. The British and the others, they're just like, oh my God. There was a report out of a paper that the Irish in particular were very saddened to see what was going on. From The Guardian, this is from Jonathan Friedland. He wrote, those outside America and the chanceries of Europe and beyond who hope that this, the Bush election that is, or the Bush presidency, would be a passing phase like a Florida hurricane that wreaks havoc only to blow over, will instead have to adjust to a different reality. For 4 years, many hoped that the course charted by Mr. Bush, a muscular go-it-alone view of the world divided by the forces of darkness and those of light, would prove to be a blip. Come November 2, 2004, in concert with allies and with respect for the international system, the U.S. had done so much to create. The norms of foreign policy pursued by every president from Roosevelt to Clinton, including the first George Bush, would be revived. Senator Kerry promised as much. Now that fantasy will be shelved. The White House is not about to ditch the approach of the last 4 years. Why should it? Despite the mayhem and the murder in Iraq, despite the death of more than 1,000 U.S. soldiers and countless and uncounted Iraqis, despite the absence of weapons of mass destruction, despite Abu Ghraib, the Bush administration won the approval of the American people. If Bush had lost, a neoconservative project would have been buried forever. But he won, and the neocons will welcome this as sweet vindication. So it will be full steam ahead. There are real threats that have to be dealt with, Daniel Pletka of the impeccably neocon American Enterprise Institute told The Guardian yesterday. Iran would not go away. Indeed, Mr. Pletka warned, force might be the only option. Nor would North Korea. We can't pretend that the world would be a prettier place if only George W. Bush was not the president. There were plenty of people around the globe who used to think precisely that way, hoping that the past 4 years were a bad dream which would end yesterday. Now they have to navigate around the geopolitical landscape in which Mr. Bush is the dominant fixed feature. And that's going to be the reality. Guys like Bichon think that's funny and they laugh about it. You know, I keep thinking again about an old clip from Hitler reading a letter from President Roosevelt to the German parliament. And this was before hostilities had actively broken out, at least to a huge extent. And Roosevelt was asking if he planned on invading or attacking any of the following countries. And he started to read a long list of countries. And as the list went on, the German parliament started clapping and laughing and enjoying, you know, like, yeah, we've got the power, you know. And that's what it is right now. I mean, these guys are on top of the world. They can do anything they want. In the meantime, yet another soldier was killed in Iraq. Do they care? No, not really. And I keep wondering what it will take to change the minds of some of these people, to get them to realize what's really going on. And I don't really think there's anything. I think if they saw, you know, if they saw pictures of Bush, you know, just actively shooting somebody, they just say, well, he deserved it. You know, just going up to a guy in a crowd, grabbing him, putting a gun to his head and firing away. They'd find a way to justify it. I mean, how do you justify Abu Ghraib? And how do you just blame it on the soldiers? How do you justify the incompetence of the loss of the 300 tons or so, the 380 tons of explosives? They weren't weapons of mass destruction, but they're the type of bombs, type of material, thank you. I hate it when I can't find the word. The type of material that can be used to make some very powerful bombs, bombs that are being used against our soldiers. But, of course, our soldiers are primarily of the working class. And Mr. Bush really doesn't care about people like that. I mean, him, the only people who exist are his friends and his rich buddies. They're the only people in the world. And if anything, this election is only going to solidify that bubble even more. Because now they don't even have to answer to the electorate anymore. And they know they can get what they want. And we're just going to see. I mean, like I said in the last segment or the last episode or whatever, we're just going to see if these guys are as bad as I think they are. And I wonder what it would take. What would happen if they suddenly decide that I'm a threat, that I'm a terrorist, and that I need to be silenced? What would Bichon do? What would the people on Free Republic do? Would they just laugh? Probably. Maybe not Bichon, because he is a friend of mine and he might be concerned, but maybe he just might, you know, shake his head and say, well, he shouldn't have, you know, messed with the powers that be. Or would he say, no, this is wrong. I know Joe, he's no threat. He may have some lunatic ideas, as he would think, but he's no serious threat. Would he do that? I would do that for him if the situation were reversed. But I just don't know. I don't know what it would take, to be quite honest. I don't know what it would take to change these people's minds. And like I said, it's very, very difficult not to be bitter. It's like, you know, you see something that is plain as the nose on my face, and to have other people just ignore it or not want to see it. Other friends are talking about how, you know, wonderful, you know, a job Bush has been doing protecting us. What happens if there's another terrorist attack here? What happens if something really nasty comes through the ports or something? Oh, of course, you know, that person was blaming the Democrats for that because, you know, it was the union people who were blocking the inspections of the ports. And it was like, how many times can you blame somebody else for something and not take accountability for your screw-ups and just kind of ignore it? I mean, how long can you do that? There was a movie called Yellowbeard with several of the Monty Python people in it, and there was a scene where there was an island that was slowly sinking. And I hope I didn't mention this in the last segment. It's the next day from when I did it. So if I mention this, if I'm repeating myself, I apologize. But anyway, the island was sinking, and the government of the island refused to admit that the island was sinking, even as it was slowly going on the water. And at the very end of the movie, or at the very end of it, there was like maybe a group of five or six people, the mayor and his daughter and a few loyal counselors. As the water was rising on the last over their heads, Yellowbeard was with his boat offering, you know, come on, I'll take you out. And, you know, and he says, oh, no, 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 the island is not sinking, it's all a rumor. And one of the council, says, scandalmonger, a rumor monger. And it's just going over their heads. And what will it take? What will it take? I don't know. All the people of the South, the people who voted so solidly for Mr. Bush, it's their sons and daughters that are going to go be fighting these wars. And it's the sons and daughters of the poor white people, the redneck, the white trash. They're the ones that are going to be fighting it. It's not going to be the mansion trash. The mansion trash will always protect their own. You know, just because they have a lot of money doesn't give them any more class. And they just use the white trash. They use them in the Civil War by saying, you know, the darkies are going to get your job. The brothers are going to take your jobs. They're using them now in the same way. And I find it difficult to believe that gay marriage was such an overwhelming issue for these people. Have they just gone insane? Type A faith, man. If the proof was shown to them right in front of their face, they probably wouldn't believe it. It's impossible for them to believe anything bad about Mr. Bush. It was impossible for them to believe anything good about Mr. Kerry. And you know, all the lefties out there blaming Kerry, well, you knock it off, nobody would have won this. Do you understand me? Nobody would have won this. If God Almighty had brought Franklin Delano Roosevelt back from the grave, and we had changed the Constitution to repeal the amendment that disallowed people from running again, Roosevelt would have lost. Eisenhower, Teddy Roosevelt, all of them. George Washington would have lost. And Washington was a war hero, and they would make things up about him. You know? They would turn George Washington into Benedict Arnold. They don't care. And I saw this coming, but nobody fucking listens to Joe. Nobody listens to Joe. They don't see what's happening. They don't understand the forces that they're dealing with here. Oh, it's going to be Kerry in a landslide. I was like, no, it's not. It never was. In a fair election, if things had been reported properly, things would have been different. And it was the same in 2000. Once it went into a deadlock tie, I had a suspicion then. I'm more sure now that things were not quite right. And now with the electronic voting, there's proof positive, or there's no proof, excuse me, that you know, there was any election fraud. How can you prove that? Did they rig it? Does it matter? Not really. The road ahead of us just got longer. When Mr. Bush was put in for the first time, I said straight out that it would take us at least 10 years to dig ourselves out of the hole that he's going to leave us in, economically. Because I was only thinking of that. God help me, I was an optimist. I figured he would screw the economy up and people would vote him out and that would be it. Instead, he did far worse. He not only screwed up the economy, he screwed up the entire world. And he still got in again. What's it going to take? Cultists, man. They're just cultists. They'll believe anything they're told. He's a war hero. Again, it's hard not to be bitter. And you're all having a good laugh about it right now. And I guess we'll just see what happens. And will everything turn into roses? I fucking doubt it. They're talking about flattening the city of Fallujah now in Iraq. Just flattening it. You know, we could get kicked out of Iraq. It's not an inconceivable proposition. If they flatten that city, and keep in mind that's a city of over 300,000 people. And keep in mind that there are a lot of holy sites in that city. And if we decide to just carpet bomb it, or maybe, God forbid, nuke it, and I wouldn't put it past them, I doubt they'll actually do that. Although I was thinking the other day, maybe they won't do it now. Maybe it won't be necessary. I think if Kerry had won, if Kerry had by some miracle managed to get in, and they would have been in, they would have still been in power until January, and they probably would have went ahead with an attack on Fallujah, making it real bloody and messy, and then just hand it over to Kerry and say, here you go. But if they do it now, then they'll have to deal with the aftermath of it. I mean, if there's a silver lining to this crowd, that's got to be it. That, you know, sooner or later, they're going to run into a problem that's going to go so catastrophic. And I mean, just beyond what we're talking, beyond, you know, a couple of soldiers dying here and there. We're talking about tens of thousands of soldiers. We're talking about losing Iraq, getting kicked out. then that's going to be their deal. If Kerry had been in there, then they could have just blamed it on him, and they could have easily tried to get another 4 years for somebody else later on. But now we can look forward to 4 more years of this and probably 4 more years of Jeb, or maybe 8 more years of Jeb, if we ever even have a chance to vote again, if it makes any difference whether we vote again. The mood at work was somber, in some cases angry. Some guys talk about going to Canada before they're drafted. A lot of young black guys that work there. And I'm like, you guys are going to be the first to go. And they're like, we know. They understand. And I keep wondering what the union's going to do. Because it's not a very strong union to begin with anyway. And all their political organizing went for nothing in this state. Because, you know, it's a red state. It's a very deep red state. And I had a guy, one of the guys, we have a lot of foreign people coming to work. I was talking with a lady who was born in Somalia and who lives here now. And surprisingly enough, she said that Somalia is a very stable country right now because the United Nations came in and they forced fair and clean clear elections, and they have a regular president now, and they don't have warlords running around. I hope what she said is true, and I hope that's correct. It would show that the UN does some things. One of the other people was bitching how the UN hasn't done anything since Sudan. Well, what the hell have we done about Sudan? You know, that's where that genocide is going on. And the Republicans even defeated a motion to call it genocide so that we could actually do something. And we don't care. There's no oil in Sudan. If it was vital to our strategic interests, we would do it. But since it's not, why do we care? They're all darkies anyway. As long as they're brown skin, we don't care what happens to them. And I had a guy from he's lived in America for a long time. Smart guy, got a degree in mechanical engineering. And he just couldn't understand, you know, how we voted for Bush like that. He said all the people he's met in America, they're very nice and very intelligent people. He doesn't understand. I said, well, you've lived mostly in, you came here from Michigan, and you've lived here in Georgia. You've lived here in Atlanta. Get outside, get out in the country, you know, go down to Macon or someplace like that, and that's where you see, you know, that's where the red vote is. That's where the rednecks are. And there's your Bush majority right there. You talk to them for 5 minutes and see if you don't get the shit scared out of you. Because these people are just fucking nuts. They're cultists, man. I mean, I'm not a liberal elitist. I don't have a college education. I'm a high school fucking graduate. I'm just a guy from the streets, you know, and not even much of that. I grew up in a fairly insulated world. That my parents didn't talk much about politics or anything like that, and I didn't get that much involved in it. When I was a kid, I was more concerned with, you know, playing with my friends out in the street or what fights we're getting into, and of course school and stuff like that. What we talk mostly about was sports. And I'm not, you know, I don't think about being a liberal elite. I'm just a guy, you know? And I see things that are right, and I see things that are wrong. And people throw, you know, these liberal stuff down, you liberal bastards, and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, you know? And they talk about ownership society. Let me ask a question. Who sweeps the streets in an ownership society? If we're all making money off of wealth somehow, who sweeps the streets? Who builds the roads? Who does the jobs that nobody else wants to do? Somebody's got to do it. But if nobody wants to do it, how does it get accomplished? Same thing in a libertarian society. Who knows? Let's take a short break. And we'll finish it up. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
On the cup. Cuppa Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's V for Vecchio, V for victory. And once again, I want to tell everybody, my friends on the left, don't panic. I know you've been the last couple of days, you've been tearing your hair out, but do whatever you need to do and then come back fighting. That's what we need to do. We need to come back fighting. We did some good things in this last election. There were some good things that were accomplished. Yes, they pale in comparison to all the bad things that happened to us. This is pretty much the end of the New Deal, as we know it, and we're going to look and see some changes along the ways of Social Security being privatized, which means it'll make it easier for George Bush's buddies to rob it from you later on in the stock market. We're probably going to see a loss of minimum wage. They'll really enforce the overtime thing now. We'll see how many people that get changed over. But they still, I don't know how much they can get away with, to be perfectly honest. Because I really don't know how far the cultists are willing to allow them to go. As for Iraq, well, the Republicans own it now. And if we get kicked out of Iraq, they're going to be blamed totally for it. In fact, everything that's going to happen to this country over the next 4 years is going to be completely theirs. They can't blame the liberals on anything now. There's absolutely nothing they can blame the liberals on. Tom Daschle is gone, or as Rush Limbaugh called him, Satan. So, you know, they can't blame him for anything. I think we need to get rid of the Democratic Leadership Council or committee or whatever the hell they are, because they are the ones that have fucked us over more than anything else. I mean, look, I understand that, you know, you're trying to go after moderates, but there are no longer moderates with the Republicans. They're fanatics. And if you try to put a person in there that's going to appeal to them, it's simply not going to work. Why vote for a Democrat that's only slightly fanatic when they can go all the way and vote for a completely fanatical Republican? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You know, stand and fight. The conservatives were in far worse shape 30 years ago than we are now. And we can build on what happened in this election. It's going to be a long, slow process, but we can build on it. Continue to live your lives. Do your things. Be more politically active if you can. We got a lot of work to do just to get to the point where we can say, okay, there's a lot of work ahead of us. You understand what I'm saying? The first job is winning back the majority and getting back in the power. And then we can really start changing things. It's going to take some time, people. You know, the problem that you had with this election and the last election is that you assumed that everything was going to happen all at once. That we can just turn things around and everything will be, you know, happy, happy, joy, joy. And it just wasn't going to fucking work that way. And if anything else, this is a good wake-up call for you to realize that you have to keep going, that it's not an easy fight. That if you want something hard enough, you have to work at it. And that's what we're going to have to do over the next 8 years or so, 8 to 12 years. It's going to take time. Don't assume everything's going to change. People, you know, the people who were screaming Kerry landslide were assuming that Kerry was going to get in there and all the stuff that happened over the last 4 years was going to get wiped out. It's simply not going to happen, people. It wasn't going to happen with Kerry, and it wasn't going to happen with Dean. It wasn't going to happen with Clark. It wasn't going to happen with Kucinich. It wasn't going to happen with Mosley Brown. It wasn't going to happen with anybody. I don't know if you can understand that or not, but it simply wasn't going to happen. Blaming Kerry for it is not the answer. Now, you know, a lot of talk has been lately about how it was the gay marriage thing, and, you know, And people still talk essentially about how the Democrats need to try to win back the redneck vote. And I'm like, why? Do we want these people representative of our party, of what we believe? Do we want these racist homophobics to be representative of who we are? You know? I mean, it's like, Now, in 11 state constitutions, it's going to be legal to discriminate against people. Is that what we want? But that's how they scare people. You know, they got no jobs, they got no money, but, you know, thank God those gays can't get married. That's the important issue to them. Late on the rent, facing eviction, son's being sent off to Iraq. We'll deal with that. It's in God's hands. But God forbid we should have those gays getting married. That's going to destroy us. And, you know, you just have to learn to deal with the fact that that's how these people are. And, you know, you can't change a brick wall like that. They're going to have to change by themselves. It's like alcoholics. Anybody out there ever live with an alcoholic? Anybody ever try to help an alcoholic? You really can't do it, can you? You can do certain things. But when it comes right down to it, the only one that has to change is themselves. And I think there's a lot of these people that are simply not going to change, and they're going to pass it on from generation to generation. And Mr. Bush isn't going to help these people because they're still poor white trash. And Mr. Bush is just using them. Now, maybe they'll never wake up to that, but sooner or later, something's got to give. Is that the way they want to spend their lives and their children's lives? All their talk about being fiercely independent and all that? Something's got to give, man. Something's got to give sooner or later. But what we have to do is we have to be ready for the point where that snaps. It's more than just getting people to the polls. And for those people who are in leadership positions with the Democratic Party, you know, it's more than just getting people to volunteer their time. You're going to have to be able to fork over some money. How many times have I said this? How much more I could do, how much more Bart Kopp can do, how much more so many other people could do if somebody says, we're going to put you on the payroll because you're sending out the right message. And we're going to make sure that you don't have to worry about things like rent and bills and that you can concentrate totally on the progressive cause at hand. We ask too much of people. It's nice to do this because I like it, and I will continue to do it because I like it, but I could do a lot more of it if I didn't have to worry about getting up and spending 8 hours putting screws in a box. Spending 40 or so hours a week doing that. If I didn't have to do that, I could do this all the time. The blog would be a lot better. The radio show would come more often. And I could have the time to publicize it like I need. You know? Somebody out there has got some money. Somebody out there can help out. We need to have an organization who's solely responsible for raising money and then, you know, getting these people on board. Let's get Atrios on board regular. Let's get Bart Kopp on board regular. Let's get Coase on board regular. The Guardian has hired Coase to write a regular column for them. That was nice. The Guardian newspaper in Great Britain. You know, that's what the right did. I mean, there's nothing wrong with certain of the tactics that they did. Of course, they paid people to basically lie for them. We don't have to pay people to lie. But we can make sure that the soldiers that we have on the floor, on the ground, are, you know, given the tools that they need. And I don't know what to say after that. You know, I don't know what to say. Anyway, I see by the clock on the wall that it's just about time to end this up, to wrap this up. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I hope you have a good week. I will be back again on Sunday, and I'm glad I managed to get a Thursday show out. Until next time, bye.
Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.